This is the State of Things broadcasting from the Upstage Cabaret at Triad Stage in Greensboro. I'm Frank Stacio. You know, Terry Kennedy never wanted to be a poet. In fact, if you told him that when he went to college, that he was going to end up making his living writing, he probably would have laughed at you. In the 1980s, greed was good. You remember that? And Kennedy and his friends, they wanted to study business, make money, conquer the world. But as college progressed, Kennedy realized two things. One, he wasn't any good at business. And two, he loved to write. So now, all these years later, he's an associate director of the MFA writing program at the University of North Carolina at Greensboro. And he has a new book of poetry coming out soon called The New River Breakdown. It's going to be reading at the Green Bean right down the street on Elm Street here in downtown Greensboro on September 20th. So we get a preview right now with Terry Kennedy joining the State of Things. Thank you, Terry.
Thank you so much for having me, Frank. I'm really happy to be here.
It's good to have you. And tell us about this book now, because it has a kind of a narrative arc. The poetry itself hangs together. Tell us about how,
yes,
how it came together.
Well, partly in this project, I wanted to write a book of poetry that my non-poetry friends would like to read. As you mentioned, I grew up in a time where all my friends, we went to business school. We were going to become titans of industry, or that was the thought when we were 18 years old. Not many of them read poetry. And I really wanted to put together a book that might bridge that gap between people who read poetry and those who don't. And that's where I sort of came up with the idea of putting together a collection of prose poems with a narrative arc to it that might make people who aren't comfortable with poetry but are comfortable with short stories or just storytelling in general with reading a book of poems.
Well, maybe you can
take
an
opportunity.
Give us a sample right now to show us kind of what you're talking about, this narrative approach to poetry. And maybe you can tell us, I think you're going to read the first poem in the book. Is that it?
Yes. This is the opening poem in the collection. It's called Morning Minnesot. It's set down in Minnesot Beach in Pamlico County here in North Carolina, where my mother's family is from. Morning Minnesot. It is morning, and the pelicans are filling the sky. They glide silently past, stare at the choppy river below. The right cuff of my pants is soaked as we walk up the beach together. I say, together, but she is far ahead of me, slender and fleet, a spring doe skimming the sand. The game we play is an ancient one. You know the name. You made the rules. A crab at the edge of the pier clacks his blue claws and scowls, and the gulls diving from the sky are maniacal. Compelled by greed, they fall, gleaming white missiles. She is so far ahead of me now that I plan for tomorrow. The pelicans, ugly with patience and wisdom, glide gently past. The hungover fishermen finish their coffee, pull on their rubber boots. Around the bend, the ferry churns the dark water white, gives three long bellows of its horn.
Morning, Minnesot. One of the poems in a new collection, New River Breakdown, by my guest Terry Kennedy. It's beautifully written. It's wonderful for the ear, and that's, to me, what qualifies it as poetry, and the visuals, the imagery. As you sit down to write a poem with a mission to bring your non-poetic friends, does that help you write, or is that a barrier, an impediment to the craft?
Well, I think that we might take a step farther down the road in that, and that it wasn't so much as when I was sitting down to write the poems that idea was in my mind. I was thinking more of the images. In Morning Minnesot, in particular, the ferry going across the Neuse River, which is strong in my memory from my childhood. It was later in the revision process that then sort of the craft starts coming in, and the idea of, all right, how am I going to shape this for the audience that I want to read the poem?
It's really active. There's a lot of stuff going on. It's not just passive visions to me and tableaus or still lives, because I begin by gliding, and that's a nice slow path. Then I've got pelicans diving, and I've got crabs snapping. And so all of that motion, snapping in different directions, the glide, and then the staccato, I mean, this is a giant verb.
Right. Well, and we respond to, things that we can see and things that we can hear. I feel like that's an important part of my work, to really put that in there so that the audience can be there with the speaker of the poem.
You talked about this wanting to bridge the gap between your sort of non-poetic friends and you, but talk about bridging the gap in your own life. There was a time when you wanted to be a titan. By the way, if you wanted to be one of those Wall Street titans in the 80s, you should have gone to Duke, because all those guys at this brokerage firms, came
correct,
from Duke.
Right.
That's right. So talk. Oh, the email, the inbox is filling up right now. It's filling up. Talk about that, your transformation from a guy who didn't think he liked poetry.
Well, I grew up in a time period when it wasn't even so much of a question, but just in the air. We were all going to go to business school like our fathers went to business school. And move into the business world, become the next generation of corporate CEOs. We were going to retire at 40, whereas our fathers were planning on retiring at 50. We were going to retire at 40. But I was a terrible business school major. Math was never my thing in high school. I probably should have listened to my guidance counselors a little more closely when I was choosing a college major. The thing was to go get the degree. It wasn't necessarily what is your aptitude.
Well, let me ask you this. Were those counselors, maybe they were taking a look at your math score saying, stay out of business, Terry, but did they say, by the way, we think you have an aptitude for language and the arts?
I don't really remember. But to look back at it, I was in honors English, and I was constantly getting tutored in math. So should have been a no-brainer, really.
Just, see, if you had a if you had a tablet when you were in middle school, that whole thing would have changed for you. It changed in college, and you actually had to be forced to take a poetry class, right?
That's correct. I kind of saw my required English courses as a waste of my time. How is studying poetry or reading short stories going to, benefit me in my future in the business world? And so I put it off, and I put it off, and I put it off, and I got into my major classes, and suddenly at the end of the semester, which was a rare great semester of mine in the business school, where I had really good grades, I get an email, and they said, none of your grades count. We're sorry. You have not completed your requirements to move into your major classes. You're going to have to take this course and then retake all the other courses. It was a bit of a shock. But in retrospect, it was probably one of the best things that's ever happened to me.
So tell us about that class then that you took.
It was your basic English 102, second semester freshman sort of English class. But I had a really wonderful teacher. He was a PhD student at the University of Georgia. He wrote articles for Rolling Stone on the side. He was a very interesting and, I kind of cringe to say it, but he was kind of cool compared to, maybe what I had been used to, teachers I used to have been studying with. And he really sort of opened the literature up for me. And I kind of fell back in love with it.
Was there a particular work, a poem or a story or novel that did it for you?
That semester, I couldn't really say. I went on, and most certainly I studied with some teachers with actually really close Greensboro connections. Jim Kibler, who was a Fred Chapel scholar, and Hubert McAlexander, who was a Peter Taylor scholar, and they definitely turned me on to authors that I probably would have never read, and that part of the reason I ended up coming to Greensboro was because of them.
Will you read another poem for us?
I would love to. So this poem is called Like Rain on a Sunny Day. Partly came out of this idea of a conversation I had with a friend about, you know, what do you call it when it's raining and it's sunny outside? When I was growing up, we called it the devil is spanking his wife. That was sort of the beginning point of this poem.
No wonder you wanted to go into business.
Like rain on a sunny day. As if it were then, through the steam of the rain at the 7-Eleven in the mid-afternoon of late July, early August. Time when water leaps from itself. You see her unexpectedly, putting gas in her station wagon, air in a tire, while her daughter watches on. And for a moment, you catch her smiling, unguarded, and you try to recall the color of her eyes, but the afternoon rain and summer sun collide so that all you have now is the nape of her neck, the curve of the shoulders that you remember from before, maybe her ears, the small of her back. But then the cashier wants to know if you found what you need, if you want something else. But this is not about desire. This is not regret. No, this is not that at all.
Terry Kennedy. Like Rain on a Sunny Day from his new collection, New River Breakdown. Terry's going to be reading from that book September 20th right down the street at Green Bean in Greensboro. So what is it about... When you talked about opening up, or you opened yourself to literature, because, you know, here's the complaint. Here was my complaint in when I was a junior in high school and what turned me around, because I had a junior in high school, this teacher we had actually made a fool of himself in front of the whole class just to get me to read a poem. And I thought, the least I can do for this man, after I'd argued with him about how stupid poetry is, because if they've got something to say, why don't they just say it? I thought the least I could do is go home and read the darn poem. And when I did, I saw what the point was, that these words were taking me in four directions at once. It wasn't just something to say. They had a million things to say, and they did it in what amounted to a paragraph. That's what happened to me. And I just wonder if there was sort of those moments for you when, if you started at that place like, why don't they just say it? Like, what's with all the obscurity already? And if there was anything in that process that was similar to that, or was it different for you?
Absolutely. I'm coming from sort of probably the exact same educational background as you. And my thinking about poetry for many years was, there's a secret here. And I don't have the key. And this is pointless. What's here for me to enjoy about that? Why does there have to be... why are they hiding the meaning of the poem?
Yeah. But you have to be a member of the club to get it.
Exactly.
So here's the cool thing. So when you write here, now all you have left is the nape of her neck and the curve of her shoulders. All right, here's what happened to me, and I bet perhaps none of the rest of you, and here's why it's not a cult. Here's why it doesn't matter that you're a member of the club. It suddenly occurred to me how memory works. It suddenly occurred to me how fragmented and weird our memory is, that we have these little pieces and fragments that we carry along with us and then reconstruct, right, and turn in. Now, you didn't sit down thinking, I mean, maybe you did, but that would be crazy to think that's what you had in mind when you wrote that. But if it unlocked that in me, if it took me to that place because your very clever artistic use of language what brought me to that place, that's the key. I'm a club of one. I'm one member of that club, and I'm a happy man for Terry Kennedy's work. I mean, is that, if you could tell, do students kind of need to hear something like that from you to know that they're free to write what's on their mind?
Yes, and not just free to write, but free to read. At UNCG, I teach a course for non-majors in poetry. Lots of students who are like me in the business school or in biology, I like to tell them that, yes, maybe if you go on to be an English major, we can delve into some of these other aspects of poetry that my colleagues teach, and it is certainly there on the page. But there is also these wonderful moments, like you mentioned. One person could, really sort of experience that moment. wait a minute, I remember seeing somebody, the nape of the neck. This creates a really human moment for me, something that I can respond to in my stomach and not in my head. And poetry, as you mentioned, and language in general, but it goes in all those directions. There could be one small thing in this poem that is very different that reaches all of you, and that's what I really hope for.
Will you read another one for us?
Sure. This last poem is called Practical Gods. It was published in O. Henry magazine. It's here in Greensboro. The one nice thing about this poem, my mom read it and she said, "Oh, is that your grandmother's bird bath in this poem?" And she was very happy about that. Yeah. And it brought up a story about when they went to buy the bird bath, and the bird bath is now in our yard, although it's broken now. I didn't tell her that part. It's called Practical Gods. The evening sun reflects off our blue bird bath. The memory of afternoon rain as the day's end is marked on an empty wall. The leaky gutter still crying, inconsolable, like a mother who has just found or lost her only child. A fact I only mention because from our bed it always seems to be raining. There is no point to this. My wife does not want a child. The weather does not reflect unknown desire. If she were home, I would undress her in the cooling light, the tears from the willows glistening on her skin. But she is in a different season, and I am here alone. What would happen next, I will not say. You should know that the blue bird bath has the slightest of cracks and is always glazed with rain. Make what you want of it. There's only one robin that visits our yard, her breast its own sunset. At dusk, she hops from puddle to puddle, listening.
Terry Kennedy's poem, Practical Gods, from his new book, New River Breakdown, going to be at the Green Bean here in Greensboro on September 20th at 7 o'clock for more readings. So tell us about the narrative arc, because each of these stories is in a kind of narrative form, but then there's a sort of larger story told by all of them. Tell us more about that.
Yes. Well, in its overall arc, it's a story of a couple, and I think that the trials of these two characters as one travels and one stays home, in a very literal sense. So if you were to read the book, you could see that narrative on the surface of the poems and on the storyline as we go through the book. But for me, it also explores this idea of what does it mean to travel? Where are we in our heads? You come home from work, maybe you're not home, really at home at work, right? Something my wife and I always talk about and something that we strive for. Let's be home. We're home. Let's be home together and be enjoying each other and not traveling back to the office in the back of our heads.
Well, and it's a wonderful kind of form that you create, because there's a narrative arc that kind of does this, so we're following the trajectory, but then we're always kind of angling down with the particulars of these stories that take us away and then draw us back. So the form itself lends to the art. It's a wonderful book, Terry, and great to meet you. Thank you for being on the program.
Thank you so much for having me.
Terry Kennedy, Associate Director of the MFA Writing Program at the University of North Carolina at Greensboro. The new book is called New River Breakdown. It's going to be at the Green Bean on September 20th, at 7 o'clock. Just ahead, we're going to talk with the band Five, and you'll get a preview right now. Stay with us.
All around the world, I see your love shining bright like a golden flame. And all that you want is for me to know your heart like I know your name. And all that we could live for, see me hopeless, free, and young. I'll make all of these stars align for us, we'll be hopelessly in love. Hopeless, free, and young. all in your hands, all that I was, all that I'll be, all that I am, it's all in your hands.
Yeah. Now they're looking at me like, what the fuck is doing? Cause I know I do some things right. Look like I'm just screwing, but I'm looking for a savior, looking for love, looking for more than a disco. Shot to the heart and the pistol, use my scars to get some, but that's life. Living, and we push it to the limits, and it's love. Try to give it up till it's finished. And it's young and it's dumb, but we don't give no, cause we're just trying to get it right. Ain't no plots and ain't no scripts, no. One time for dudes on the east side, two times for cool, throw the good sign, three times to hit for the third time, throw it up worldwide.
Oh, all that we could live for should be hopeless.